Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
Doing well.
Good.
Doing well.
Good.
Any good news today?
We have a couple of good news items today, I
yeah.
think.
Yeah.
So we should be happy.
I guess maybe our president, maybe he's listening a little bit.
Maybe he's watching
No, that's a dream. I dreamt that last night.
So should be watching the show.
Not quite so. But part of his soul and part of his brain, I think, listens and knows it.
Yeah.
But anyway, he has other things to think about. But we want to talk about him a little bit. And then we want to talk about our most popular doctor ever, Fauci. Yeah. So Trump now is, you know, we complain a lot about his appointments. You know, he'll say, let's do this. I say, yeah, that's a good idea. But then he goes and appoints people, and they get the power to contradict what he wants to do.
Yeah.
And not that I think Fauci was, hand-picked by Trump. He's just been around.
Forever.
I mean, what he is not a bad choice on Trump. Trump is really a victim of a system that ingrains this. You know, you have the deep state system, but you just have the bureaucratic deep state type people that have been around a long time and think they own the world, and that's where Fauci is, you know. But Trump got a little bit annoyed with him yesterday, and they had a few words. So I think this is good. Maybe this is a sign. But as far as strategy goes for the next week or two, I don't think it's going to make a lot of difference because there's still a lot of people, at least the media, the mainstream media, would lead us to believe that everybody loves Fauci and he can do no wrong. So, but Trump got a little bit annoyed yesterday, and I think he had a couple of strong words for him.
He did, and in fact, we have that first clip. Someone made it into a nice little meme for us, which is what happened. He was on a conference call with some people, including some reporters, and he knew they were on the call, and here's what he had to say. People are tired of hearing Fauci and these idiots, all these idiots who got it wrong. And then he said, every time he goes on television, there's always a bomb, but there's a bigger bomb if you fire him. The guy's a disaster. That's him yesterday. And he also, to your point, Dr. Paul, he also said, he's been here for 500 years, he said of Fauci. He's been here forever. So it really was an open break. It made the headlines. It's interesting the effect it might have on Fauci, because I think it seriously undermines Fauci. It makes him the object, the symbol of the failure of the response to coronavirus, yeah. And a real, you know, strong point.
And I think Trump made the point that the people are getting tired of Fauci and they're tired of the lockdown. And, of course, we wanted them to be tired a long time ago or an understanding early on not to get so embedded with this. But anyway, Trump is getting bolder than ever. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, politically it's not good because you're anti-science and you're challenging the status quo. You're challenging these great leaders in the medical profession, Dr. Fauci. So I think there's a lot of quietness and people maybe have a much stronger sentiment and agreement with the president. Of course, that happened in 2016, that the people were agreeing with him, but it just wasn't popular. But there's a lot of, you know, his rallies are much bigger than they were in 16.
Yeah,
so there must be a lot of people that are willing to stand behind him. And, you know, the real sad part is I don't recall specifically at rallies in a political campaign or presidential campaign where supporters were attacked.
Yeah.
I mean, viciously attacked. And this means, though, that would help, you know, people who aren't looking for a fight. I can see why I'm staying away from there. I don't want to go in there and get beat up.
Yeah.
But so that means that maybe what we're listening to and watching, if anybody is depending on all the truth coming from polls, I think that is an illusion. And the truth will come out on election day. Maybe.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When you say who's counting the votes, you know, that's the big thing. So there's a lot of unknowns coming up in these next couple of weeks.
It's a very close race. There's no question about it. And what's interesting is to watch Trump position himself in a very, I don't know if he's just accidentally very good or if he just really knows what he's doing, but you think about all these people who've had their work taken away, who have been sitting at home all this time, who've been miserable. They're not the fancy people with the white-collar jobs, the teachers who are happy not to go to work. These are real people, and they probably, a lot of them didn't like Trump. But when Trump comes out and says, I'm the guy who's going to let you live your life again, you can only imagine he's going to attract voters who wouldn't normally be motivated. Maybe they'll stay home. But he had a big rally, speaking of rallies, a big rally in Arizona, which is a key swing state for him. Looks like right now it's going to Biden, but he could turn the tide. But here's what he said, and this is another way he made the distinction that's so important. He said, quote, you know, Biden wants to lock it down. He wants to listen to Fauci. So they talk about that strong division. It's really how he's positioning it. But the funny thing is, once Trump dared to criticize St. Fauci, the media went completely berserk. And let's have this next clip. CNN, you can always count on them to do something completely insane. Here's Stephen Collinson yesterday, or today. Trump closes his campaign by insulting Fauci for telling the truth. Yeah, okay. And let's go to the next one. Here, I think, is the, was it the New Yorker, New York Magazine? Why Trump ended the task force and put a kook in charge of the coronavirus. This is Jonathan Chiat, a horrible, horrible leftist, snobby journalist. He talks to someone like Atlas, a distinguished doctor and a policy expert. He just writes him off as a kook because he disagrees. So I think this actually shows panic on their part. This shows that Trump is now seeing through the disguise that they put on, and it's a pretty interesting thing.
Yeah, I think something is shifting. We might as well just go right into verification of this coming out of the Dallas Morning News.
Yeah, yeah.
This to me is astounding, that they reprinted the manifesto, the Great Barrington Declaration, where thousands of people have signed up. And I would say Dallas Morning News is rather establishment newspaper,
yeah.
You know, and they came out and reproduced it and said maybe we ought to have a sensible approach to this. I think this is startling. I think it's great. And I told you a little while ago what it made me think of. You know, when I heard this was happening, I said, you know, it reminds me of 1968. And I remember this because it had to do after the Tet Offensive. That was a failure. Well, it was a positive for the Vietnamese, mm-hmm. and the Americans really lost because they had no idea that the Vietnamese could be this strong, and it was the crowning blow that finally got LBJ to do probably one of the few sensible things he ever did in his life, and as I've had it, he says I've had it. Understanding LBJ, you live a lifetime to be the president, yeah. And in charge of a war, and he was not going to lose this war. But his statement was, this is when he was making his decision. He says, if I've lost Cronkite, I've lost middle America. Now, I think the analogy is probably not perfect, but if they lose the Dallas Morning News and a few other big newspapers, this is a crack in the ice there. This, I think, is an indication that people, it's not so much they're shifting over and saying, everything they've ever said on the Liberty Report really is true. They're just saying, you know, maybe what we're doing isn't too smart.
Yeah.
And so I think that is great news. I think that if it persists, if the momentum is going to build. And once again, as you indicated, you think Trump is the most perfect politician or the luckiest. So it might make the big difference.
Okay, let's skip ahead, actually. Skip the next one, that tweet, and go to the Dallas Morning News clip. And this is a clip of the article, and you can have a look at that. It's time to take a focused approach to COVID-19 protection and stop acting rashly. Subtitle, we support the Great Barrington Declaration. And let's go to the next one. Here's a quote that I pulled out from the article. It's early on in the article. Fascinating. We have watched with surprise and dismay as mandates and policies designed to contain the spread of COVID-19 increasingly depart from the actual data and science. As a result, those most vulnerable to the disease continue to die, while the least vulnerable continue to suffer the mental, emotional, and financial impacts of the lockdown. That is probably one of the most powerful statements I've ever read about it.
You know, and this is inviting something that I tried to explain yesterday, and that is that the science, there's always disagreements in the science, and that's okay, and it's argued out, but it essentially is never, you know, two sides are picked because Republicans have an opinion by science and the Democrats have an opinion by science. If there's a true disagreement, which there usually is on scientific matters, and therefore, you know, some Republicans would disagree with other Republicans and some Democrats disagree with others. And I think this is what is starting to happen, that some people now, if they see the momentum, actually the momentum may work against them, because if a few more people decide that it's not politically popular. Before, it's such an embarrassment for some people to challenge the status quo or challenge the correct Democratic Party position, and they don't want to be embarrassed and they go along with it. So I see this as some positive things happening.
It's very important, and the article stresses two things: the focused protection of the vulnerable, which is what the Barrington Declaration says, and the freedom to choose individual protection for others. If you're not in this most vulnerable, then you should have the total freedom. And, you know, this quote that we talked about, it really breaks this false dichotomy. If you don't want to lock down, you just want old people to die. And we heard it so much early on, even among people that we know. Oh, Ron Paul just wants old people to die. You know, he just doesn't care. But what they're saying is that actually people at risk are still dying, and dying maybe even more because of the lockdowns. Well, at the same time, those who have little risk, and here's a quote that they say, for people under 70, the risks for COVID-19 are very similar to the flu. That's in the article. So for people that are under 70 and not in those risk zones at all, they are being forced to suffer, and they talk about fear, stress, and isolation, how they're leading to serious mental issues among Americans who are literally facing a flu epidemic rather than the bubonic plague.
Here's an example of a conclusion that they've come to, medically speaking, and it's beneficial. You know, that in medically protecting the elderly makes a lot of sense, and they can do that without destroying the liberties of everybody else. This whole idea, the greatest insult to common sense has been the abuse of young people. You know, the kids in grade school and all. But I see more kids going to school, you know, than there had been, and maybe that's happening. There seems to be pockets of places where they're so bullheaded, they won't even, you know, look at the other side of the argument. But I think what we're talking about today is more and more people are saying, maybe they are. I hope it's contagious, this whole thought that they should be thoughtful and try to figure out what is the best way to go.
The other thing, and I think that my one critique, and Mises Institute had a good article that talked about this too, my one critique of the great Barrington Declaration is that it wasn't, I don't think, explicit enough in the fact they talk about protecting the elderly and the vulnerable, but I think it should have been a little bit more explicit in the area of not forcing the elderly to be protected if they don't want. Some people in nursing homes, they don't care. They want to see their family. They want to get out and live their lives. So you shouldn't have this force, but they should also have the freedom to choose. But if they choose to be more protected, then of course you can devote the resources to it.
Of course, a system that is designed to protect voluntarism takes care of that, and you don't have to ignore the medical principles that people are learning, and you can follow medical practice at the same time. You can let people voluntarily take care of themselves. And most people are going to do what is the right thing to do. If people know that if you have a serious infectious disease, most of them absolutely don't want to expose more people. Yeah. I can't go to see my mother today in a nursing home. You know, it doesn't make any sense. So they can, but that would convey a confidence by the bureaucrats and the politicians that people are bright enough to take care of themselves. No, we need Governor Cuomo to tell us what to do, and he will take care of us. And, of course, that happens so often. The whole socialist welfare state is based on the fact that somebody other than the individual knows what's best for them.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, the one thing that the pro-lockdowners, the Faucis, and all of the screaming mainstream media, The one thing that they cannot see be defeated, this one shibboleth that they've put up that can't be defeated, is the idea, the fact that coronavirus, COVID-19, does not affect everyone equally. We've got this hyper-egalitarian society. Maybe that's responsible for it. But they simply cannot allow this to be accepted as conventional wisdom, even though it's a fact. It's a fact, and we know it now 6 or 7 months into this, that people are not affected equally. Even someone of a relatively advanced age and probably not the greatest physical health like Trump, and good grief, Chris Christie, the, you know, the poster child of a rough lifestyle, these guys got it, beat it, and got over it, you know. So they can't stand the fact that it doesn't affect people equally.
And the other factor that makes it more difficult is the there's the variable tests that they're taking. People, there are a lot of tests out there, and nobody's absolutely sure what is the very, very best test that identifies the virus.
Yeah.
And you know, there must be, there's something going on there, but I don't think it's quite like other viruses. There are some doctors that I respect and I read, and he says they don't know it. And of course, we know the statistics had been fudged for a long time. You know, by quoting how many people are really sick. So when they start talking about, well, the projections were just ridiculous. Millions of people are going to die. You know, it's the end of the world is coming. And they don't talk like that anymore, but there's still some that quote the statistics in a negative manner that they don't understand it. But I think that the whole thing about the test is important. But that's the next step that we're going to be talking about will be, well, under these circumstances, if there are some variables that we don't quite understand, does that mean it'll be a little more complicated making a vaccine? And my answer is yes, it's going to be more complicated. And yet the rush for the vaccine is more or less the best thing. That's why I hope you know, the situation improves tremendously, that people say, hey, I don't think I need a vaccine. Yeah. I'm doing okay, and I don't know anybody else that needs it.
Yeah. You mentioned the problem with accuracy, and I was going to bring this up, I think, last week or a couple of days ago. But Collin County, which is one of our favorite counties in Texas because they have a great judge there, they announced that they're taking the entire COVID dashboard off of their county website. They said, A, it's really not a big problem for us anymore, and B, the numbers coming out of Austin are so inaccurate and it's so impossible to make policy on. Forget it. We don't even want to have it on our site. I wanted to bring up one other thing, Dr. Paul, as long as we're talking about this, and that's Dr. Deborah Birx. We spend a lot of time smashing Fauci because he kind of asked for it. He always loves the microphone. Birx, in some way, is more dangerous because she works behind the scenes, and she does a lot of knife jabbing behind the scenes. She's been trying very, very strongly to get Atlas fired. She went over to Pence and said, hey, you got to get rid of this guy. This is terrible. The guy's insane. We got to get rid of him. And Pence to hit. Well, Pence didn't take a strong stand, but he didn't go along with it. And she also wants to shut, this is from a CNN article. She wants to shut down debate on coronavirus strategies. There shouldn't be no longer be a debate. The science is settled on all this. Don't you dare question things. She expressed very, very much happiness that Dr. Atlas's tweet was taken down. Remember the tweet where he said, hey, you don't really need a mask all the time. Just do it when you really need it. She was happy that was taken down, which shows that she has an authoritarian streak. And here's what she said. She even insulted Trump. She's attacking Trump for listening to Atlas. She said, if he likes the sound of it, he believes it, you know, as if Trump's just an idiot. So Birx is also really, really bad news.
Good. We'll take care of that. We'll expose her. And we have enough of a job, I guess, getting people to diminish their enthusiasm for Fauci.
Yeah. Well, I was going to put up a tweet. Do you want to change the subject?
No, or? After you do that, then we will, because I want to mention one foreign policy factor.
Okay.
Situation.
Go ahead.
I just
want to put up our good friend Jeff Dice, president of the Mises Institute. Kind of used to work in your office for a few years, but he had a great tweet, and I don't know if we can, because I got the thing all bungled up. But there we go, thanks. He tweeted this this morning, and this I think is perfect. COVID is entirely a political story at this point. Therefore, it's about perceptions and tribes than science or facts. The 68 Hong Kong flu killed at least 1 million and 100,000 Americans when the worldwide population was less than half today. The world did not shut down. And he followed that up by saying the politically driven COVID story would be very different if social media did not exist, if Hillary Clinton were president, or if Get Trump did not animate the media as it does. Same facts would have given us a very different story. Well said.
Right. The other subject I wanted to bring up is a foreign policy statement. I know there's no area of the world right now where we have troops lined up by the tens of thousands and the tanks are going to roll, but there's still a lot of danger out there. And I see, as we've talked about so often on this program, there's a danger when a country, which is very strong, has a foreign policy of intervention. That is, they become the boss of the world, and they tell people what to do. If they don't do what they're told, they have sanctions put on them. And then you have the military-industrial complex has to make some money. So if there is some friction out there, we have to make weapons for ourselves, but we make weapons for everybody else. And I think that is ongoing. And one headline that caught my attention this past week was what's going on in the South China Sea. Because most people now, Republicans and Democrats, have more or less acknowledged that China is the arch enemy.
Yeah.
And they're probably not our best friends, but I don't paint them as if they're about to nuke anybody. You know, I don't think that's happening. I think what's happened is they've done a better job at making money, selling us junk, but we gave them our dollars, and now but they're wisely taking that money, and they're investing around the world, and they have investment in Africa. So it's a little bit of jealousy. That this communist country is doing it. Well, in the pure sense of the word, they're not the Marxist countries of China and Russia was. Yeah. I mean, they have a lot of profiteering by their crony capitalists too.
Yeah.
But anyway, the headline said that there's U.S. 60 spy planes that flew near the coast of China in September. Wonder, did you feel a lot? I mean, you probably didn't even know there were 60 flights. I didn't know there were 60 flights, but it makes me feel less safe. What are we doing that for? You know, and then they do these dredging of to get some a sandbar where they can land an airplane. We have to go to war over it.
Yeah.
But there's a lot in there, and I think that also the trouble is stirring up with Taiwan, because Taiwan, you know, it's been our allies, even though that we broke relations with them, but we all of a sudden, when you read these stories about what's going on, you usually can find someplace, well, we'll be selling them more weapons.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be selling more weapons. So not only do we sell more weapons to, the Taiwanese, but we sell more weapons to our own government,
yeah.
You know, the military-industrial complex. And they're doing quite well. I don't think they're in recession at the moment.
And Trump's not shy about it. He's just out there as a huckster. Hey, buy our stuff. Buy our weapons. Buy our stuff. It's great for everyone. You know, it's really one of the weaknesses, the obsession with hating China. And I think it really is driven by the military-industrial complex. And if you look at who funds the think tanks, look at who's involved in media, look at who's involved in the Atlantic Council and all these places, it's always huge, huge money from the military-industrial complex who put out policy papers about what a horrible threat China is. We got to do something about it. So really, you need to follow the money to find the origins of this obsession with hating China. You know, there were two speeches that Defense Secretary Esper gave last week calling for an increase in military spending to counter Russia and China. They are near peer rivals to us, he said. But the question is, why not trade with him? Why not do what you've always said? Because if we just destroy our economy, we say it over and over, destroy our economy with endless military spending, of course we're actually going to not be near peer rivals. We're going to be under them, and they'll have a boot on our neck if they want to.
But it's also become convenient in the last six months, to have an enemy that we can blame the virus on.
Yeah.
So right now it's China. And I don't think any one person in this country really, really knows exactly what China did or planned to do or whether they were using bioterrorism or what. But in the meantime, it sure fell into place because it builds into this whole idea that China bashing is very, very popular. And most people now believe that China, you know, gave us this virus.
Yeah.
So maybe when it goes away, the Chinese going to get credit? I hope not. I hope common sense gets the credit for it. But no, it's a convenient excuse for lockdowns and all these other things, and to China bash and also keep building. The other countries around that area, including Vietnam and Japan, they're not interested they're not saying, go, 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 America. They're on the front line there. So they're not so happy with us, you know, stirring up trouble there. And yet these people say, oh, no, they depend on us. We're going to protect them. China's ready to invade Japan, you know, this sort of thing.
Well, the thing is, there's a lot, so much criticism of China for giving us this virus, you know, and even President Trump said it. They're going to pay for giving me that flu. And it's really goes beyond what any rational person would think. But the thing is, one place where we could actually, where I would criticize China, right? Why would we copy that, which is their response to the COVID, the coronavirus, shutting down cities, welding doors shut, putting people on for surveillance. That's the one area where we could criticize it, but instead of criticizing it, we've emulated and adopted it. So it's completely insane.
You know, in checking some of the stories written about this subject, they were talking about our relationships, with China, and it turns out that we do some partnerships with them still, and most of them are economic partnerships. And I keep thinking, we send them money, and then they go and they spend, and we work with them. It's nothing more than, you know, crony capitalism type.
Yeah.
So even if they're away from this idea that we're going to have a nuclear exchange and have invasion of each other's countries, you know, at times they're involved in working together and spending more money, and the people suffer, you know. But the big thing we don't know for sure now is I don't have a full understanding on whether the so-called average person in China is their well-being is going down. I seem to think that it's probably going up because they don't have to spend quite as much money as we do. See, every time we spend money to be safe and secure and defend ourselves against Russia and China and Iran, you know, we feel better. But if China doesn't spend, and they don't even come close to spending what we spend, what happens? That wealth stays in their country.
Yeah.
So I would think that there would be an improvement, but I don't have the statistic in front of me to prove that, but I think that would be a natural instinct for me to think that if you spend less money fighting wars that you don't need to fight or creating problems, the healthier and wealthier the
yeah.
people are of their own country.
More peace and prosperity over there. Well, if we're ready to shut it down, Dr. Paul, I'm going to just put up a final thing, unless you have something else before we close it out. Put up a last graph, please. Take a look at this, Dr. Paul. This is yesterday in Texas. Daily deaths, October 19, 17 people from coronavirus. This is a state of 30 million people, the second largest state in the United States of America. Yesterday, 17 people died of COVID. Yet the state is still in many ways locked down. You can't walk around places like Houston and Austin and Dallas without having your masks on, without cowering in fear. You can't go to a restaurant. You can't have bars open. We have a governor that refuses to allow basic freedoms to people in Texas all over what? And I don't know the statistics either, but my guess is there are many more people were killed in car crashes yesterday than died of coronavirus. So the question is, how long are they going to keep Texas and the rest of the United States shut down over 17 deaths, over 15, 5, 4? I think there were 4 in Virginia yesterday. How long?
But don't you think this is related to the story from the Dallas Morning News? I mean, don't
yeah.
you think that makes them feel better that they're not risk takers?
Yeah.
They want to be, you know, up on it. And I think the statistics are out there. They can't reverse these now if
yeah.
tomorrow they, you know, just throw them away. But the people, I mean, if you just listen to the mainstream media news, I mean, they talk about the epidemic is worse than ever.
Worse than
more
spikes.
People in the hospital spikes. Than ever before, you
yeah.
know. So that's the thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, and if masks work and they've been wearing masks so long, how can they talk about spikes? At the very least, they should be leveling off, right? How can you be wearing masks and having spikes? So anyway, I'll turn it back over to you, Dr. Paul.
Very good, and I want to thank our viewers today for tuning in today because I feel like we've covered some stories that are really optimistic that the people are waking up and they're taking a bit of a risk talking about the truth. And I think that's what's happening. I think the reality is that there's a lot yet to be understood about the coronavirus, what really exists, how bad it really is. And they're starting to figure out it might not be nearly as bad as we were told it was going to be 6 months ago. So, and they're admitting these things. If you go through there, even CDC and WHO, they admit that they've made mistakes, but you never hear that. The people who have an agenda to scare the living daylights out of everybody so they can lock down and punish some companies at the same time they reward other companies, that's probably one of the things that is the most aggravating thing is how many big companies and how many people have benefited by the lockdown and how many small shopkeepers have lost their jobs and are still in big trouble. And to me, the conclusion that they have come to is very annoying. Just more money. And now they're up there. Even today, they're arguing, when's the next stimulus coming? Are they talking about $1 billion or $2 billion or $100 billion? No, they're talking about $1 trillion, you know, for more stimulus on problems that they've created out of thin air. What a waste. And it all occurs because they either on purpose, which is probably the case, or they're totally confused about what liberty is all about, how valuable it is, and how well we can do in the goals for gaining peace and prosperity. Or they just don't care. Who knows? But I think the people want peace and prosperity, and that goal can be achieved when we emphasize the importance of individual liberty and have a people that endorse those ideas. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.